Welcome to the Events Innovator Show, where we explore the ideas and strategies that are transforming events. Get ready to unlock the secrets to creating extraordinary experiences. And now, here's your host, Phil Michon.
Do you ever go to a show and you wonder who is behind the scenes on this show? Well, that's the way it was for me the first time I went to VidCon, a huge event for creators in the video space. And I found out very quickly that it was a guy named Jim Lauterbach. And I wondered, what did he do? Well, we ended up having him speak at Social Media Marketing World a few times. I got to know him. And then when he left there and I started this podcast, I said, we've got to get him on the show and hear the inside of how he ran that event and what he's learned. So with no further ado, here comes Jim Lauterbach. Well, welcome everybody. Very excited for the conversation we're going to have today with Jim Lauterbach. Jim has been doing events for quite a while, and he's been in the creator industry, I think, most of your career. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here. Appreciate it.
Give just a quick run on what you've done in your career, and then we've got a conversation we're going to have, but give everyone some context of the events that you've run and how you got into that.
Sure. Well, context, I was a programmer developer early on and fell into media when I answered an ad in the New York Times and ended up running reviews at PC Week, editor-in-chief of PC Magazine. So it was in those early magazine days. We started doing events at Ziff Davis. I mean, when I was at Ziff Davis, we bought Comdex, if you remember Comdex. We bought NetWorld plus Interop and started this thing called Digital Life. And so that's, I started going and speaking at events and hearing about them, reading about them, et cetera. Ended up leaving there, started a cable network about technology called ZDTV, became Tech TV. While I was there, we started the Best of CES. So we went out and actually, I built a lab of 10 people to go out and test as many products as they could at CES. And this was like 98, 99, 2000. After that, ended up running an online video network, an MCN, early in the YouTube space. Got to know these guys who built an event in the creator space, in the YouTube space, Hank and John Green, called VidCon. I was there at the first one on their advisory board, sold that company to Discovery. And when I left, I called up Hank Green, who was running. I was like, Hank, I have a non-compete. I can't go do another media startup, but I can do events. He's like, come build my industry track at the Anaheim Convention Center at VidCon. I was like, okay. So that was my first really, I got into events. I started actually building a track. I ended up taking it over for Hank and selling it to Viacom and took it around the world, COVID, blah, blah. And here I am. Now I work with a bunch of different events trying to build their industry content in the creator space.
So VidCon, what year was it that you first got involved there?
2014. I started working with them to build the industry track and turn it into like the industry event in the creator space for the year 2015 for VidCon.
Now I was there around that time. I forget the first. I went 3 years in a row, and I think it was 15 or 16 the first time because we were very attracted to what you were doing for that audience. Now, I don't know if it's this big anymore. My memory is the last time I went, it was in the 25,000 or so people. Is that the peak, or what was the peak?
We ended up about in 2019, I think we peaked out right before COVID at about 75,000. But that's, you know, the way that you count, we used festival counting because we'd already sold to Viacom and they were really interested in the whole festival thing. They were doing a comedy festival in San Francisco called Clusterfest and a bunch of others. And so that was the way that you would count there as a 3-day event. You count the door each day and, multiply, you know, add them all together.
But probably for everyone listening here, the industry track is more similar to what most of us are putting on. Give us some context for that. Like, how large was the industry track?
Yeah, the industry track, I think we were in the 7,000 range of tickets sold for the industry track. So we would do it on the third floor of the Anaheim Convention Center, 5,000 to 7,000. It was, you know, I had four rooms active at a ballroom and a couple of other speaker rooms, lounge, etc. But VidCon itself is really three shows in one. It's a fan fest. So the ground floor, the expo hall, is all for fans to see their favorite creators, and there's lots of booths. we had a creator track where we teach people to be creators and best practices. And that's on the second floor of the Anaheim Convention Center. And then on the third floor, and this is the original building, the third floor is the industry track. So we really had three shows in one, a convention, a festival, and a summit. The industry track was a kind of a summit.
Yeah. Well, and some of us who are listening, you're doing that. You're doing three events at one. And most of us, since COVID, if we're doing a hybrid event, are doing two events at the same time. And yet we may not think about it that way. That's not where I want to go today, but we maybe can come back to that. How do you do simultaneous shows at the same time if it's one person, one team? But you made a comment to me about a conference that you went to recently, NAB, and you did some experiments on engagement and how do you get people talking to each other, which I think the larger the show you do, the more challenging this becomes, because you were making the comment, if you're neurodiverse, or introverted or any of those things, you're not as comfortable walking into a room and where they just say network. And I remember going to VidCon and you had a pool party for the industry. And that was like the one of the most awkward moments for me until I think you may have been the one or somebody else introduced me to Sean Cannell. This is before Sean Cannell was known the way he is today. And that opened up all kinds of doors because then you start meeting people. But that's not an easy first thing to do if you're introverted. And a lot of events just say, go network. Here's a room. Here's people. Just go fish. You tried something. Tell us about the background and what the experiment was that you did. And let's talk about how it went.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this for a little while. And you inspired me with some of your writing as well to think about this with a little bit more clarity. Look, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool extrovert. Pop me anywhere, I'll wander around and talk to people. But I know not everyone is like that. I mean, my wife's not that way. I totally know it. And so what I decided to do at this event at NAB, that we're an event about the creator side of things, is I had the standard panel. I'd get two or three great speakers on stage and a moderator, but I had a separate space where I wanted to do roundtable AMA. So the idea was, and I'd seen this at another event that I did a couple of years ago, which I just came in and moderated a session, which is when you get people in an environment where they can talk to each other, obviously they're there because they're interested in the content. If they were in the session, they were interested in the speakers on the session and the content there. What if we hoovered up the speakers, moved them to another space, and had it more of a roundtable where they could ask each other questions, they could have an AMA, and it was more of a roundtable discussion? And as I've seen these play out at some of this level, it's a great way for people to talk with each other. Suddenly you're sitting next to someone, they ask a question, and you're like, oh, wait, I have that same question. It's not just a megaphone, but it's more of a discussion, a conversation. And so for 10 of the sessions or so that we did, I set up that and did it. And there was a bunch of things I learned, but it really was a good way to people let their hair down. They're much more casual. The speakers who did it were great because they really had some good one-on-one discussions. And I like that idea. I just need to refine it because there are a bunch of things that didn't work as well.
Before you go into what didn't work and what did work, just I want to make sure I understand. So this was a panel where you had three or four people on the stage, and then you would take them to another room and have the number of tables that there were speakers. Is that how it worked? Or were there tables where a speaker wasn't even present and talking about the same subject?
Well, that's part of what worked and what didn't work. The way I wanted to do it, was to have a room where I would have tables set up in more of a U shape. Or a box shape, right? Where it was just one long continuous, you know, rectangular table with seats all around it. You know, ideally I'd have a round table, but I expected 30 or 40 or 50 people max, maybe, rather than, you know, the 20 or 15 that you can put around a round. So imagine a very large round table.
Yeah.
With the speakers or the ones who wanted to participate at one end, or maybe interspersed, but that was the goal. That was the vision in my brain. What I didn't get that vision put in place, but anyway, so I didn't want to have separate tables. I know you guys do a good job with this at the lunches and things like that, where you have tables and people can sit and enjoy. But I really wanted a conversation of everybody who liked the topic and wanted to go deeper could sit with the speakers who had time to go in and do it, and really just go wherever anybody wanted to talk about. No agenda, no setup, no interviews, just do it.
But it was one conversation around a large...
One conversation, exactly.
So everyone could participate, but were the experts truly experts or people who had also experience able to participate? It was just a conversation about the topic and let's go deep.
Exactly. And you know, when you do sessions and I like to, when I host a session, I like to go out and run the mics as well. And when people are asking questions, and there are often people who have a lot to add. I mean, there's always people in the session who just want to talk about themselves when you give them a mic. So I've gotten good at snatching it back, but there are always really smart people who have something to add to the discussion. And the idea of getting them all together seemed like a really cool idea. Like, for example, one of the sessions I did was we did a little bit around sports and marketing and the future of what was going on. And I noticed someone that I'd met, 6 months ago, who was an Olympic snowboarder who was now working and getting into, like, she's got a great Instagram account and was doing that all the time she was snowboarding. But she had a lot of experience of what it was like being an athlete, stopping being a snowboarder and kind of easing into being a creator. And she asked a question, put her hand up. And that was somebody who was like, I know there are people like this in the audience that have things to share. You just don't know it when you have a couple people on stage and just an audience full of people who really can't react and respond and be part of the conversation.
Yeah, I've got a friend, John Berghoff, and it's not his statement originally, but he talks about the wisdom in the room, that there's a lot more wisdom than is on stage. And if you can tap into all the wisdom that's in the room, then you're going to have a much greater conversation and get to knowledge and wisdom a whole lot faster. So I think what you're doing is a great experiment. All right. So talk about what went well and then what didn't go well.
So what went well is with the conversations we had were amazing. I mean, I had this room. I'll start with what didn't go well because it'd give you a sense of what did go well too. Rather than having something like custom set up for this, it was just a workshop or just another space that had, you know, 50 or 60 seats set up theater style. Really no stage, but just a place where people could hang out. It was really designed for a single person talking in a workshop. But because there weren't as many workshops set up during the event, I just took it over when I needed it. And I was set it up for a half hour, 20 minutes to a half hour, right after the session. The design of the room was all wrong because it was theater style, not round table. And so it became more of a, not a megaphone, because there was a lot of back and forth. And I ran mics for most of it. So I would get people to chat back and forth and ask people questions and things like that. But it was not as interactive as I had hoped, but everybody loved it. We even had one that was designed just for a roundtable with one of the top folks on the algorithm at YouTube. And we basically, this was all on the show floor as well. So it was dirty with sound and stuff like that. But we had like 200 people all crammed around coming into this. And it was like, it was a huge success. And the organizers of NAB realized that this was a great thing that we definitely need to do more of, and which we will next year. But the other thing that I learned was, and I was like, because I wanted to start the AMA right after the session ended. So I got up there on stage. I'm like, okay, you guys, okay, speakers, let's go over and get you over in the AMA room. But I forgot that speakers, I want to take their pictures and so they can put them on social. And there was like, I ended up moving people too quickly. So I should have scheduled it 15 or 20 minutes afterwards so that I had time for the speakers to do their speaker thing. I also, one of the things I wanted to avoid was, you know, when speakers go off stage and then you have all the attendees come in and the ones who want to speak like glom around them and they can't go anywhere. I was really trying to solve for that in an environment where everyone could have a discussion with the speakers, but they didn't feel like they just had a long line of people and it was like, you know, a little meet and greet thing too. So not perfect, not sure the best way to do it going forward, but I know I need the room design to be more like what was in my head. I need to figure out how to schedule it. What I'm doing at Open Sauce, which is an event that I'm running in July, is I'm going to do something similar, but I have some separate areas set up that will be set up like roundtables in tents. This is Maker Faire meets VidCon style event. It's outdoors, some of it outdoors, some indoors. But I have these tents, roundtables, and I'm going to separately schedule my AMAs with the speakers in two blocks, one during lunch and one during a break, so people can go out and be part of that too. I'm not sure if that'll work either, but we're going to refine it.
Yeah, it's interesting we have this phenomenon. I think you've experienced it when a session lets out. First, there's the people who just want to go take a picture, but usually the line of people, they have specific questions that they don't necessarily want to ask in front of 200 people. They want that one-to-one. It's the hallway phenomenon where, you know, I saw Daryl Eaves do this last year where he was there for an hour, yeah, just answering questions and giving people time. And it's like, that's one of the treasures that can happen in those kind of settings. So I think you're right to like maybe schedule it at a different time when people can show up. And I love that there's no competition. I think in what you were just saying, like there's not sessions you could go to, but just AMAs. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I've got three or four of these set up and I'm just going to do an AMA here, an AMA here, an AMA here, an AMA here. I want it to be more of a round table. I want it to be more of a conversation. I'll probably try to get a facilitator in there. And if I can get the, like, let's say we did a, you know, I mean, Daryl probably did. I mean, Daryl's amazing. I'm sure he did a monologue and spoke for like an hour and was amazing. But, you know, I'd want to have someone in there to just not necessarily interview, but guide, to be able to like question comes up, but have people talk to each other. So I've got to figure out what that facilitator role is and whether my moderators of the panel can also facilitate, or if I need separate ones and it's a different skill set. I don't know. We'll play around with all those things.
What it sounds like you're solving is the in-between. So you got the keynote or the session where they've been on stage and they're just talking and sharing, and maybe there's a little bit of Q&A at the end. And then you've got the hallway conversations that I'm talking about where they talk one-to-one or one-to-three with the line of people. You're addressing the in-between, the chance to get a group of people to have a conversation around the same topic, and the expert or experts are there. Would that be kind of how you're positioning this?
Yeah. Although I am also trying to solve for the line of people as well. Maybe I'm trying, and maybe when I think it through, so this is why it's nice to talk about it with you, is maybe I can't solve for all of those in one thing, and maybe we'll still have that line. But maybe if we do it more as a round table, there'll be less people in the line after the event. I don't know. It's a really good question. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know if you can perfectly solve for it, but I think you're creating an opportunity to have a deeper conversation that can then maybe lead to even deeper conversations. Because you told me one of the reasons for doing this is engagement. Well, and how do you get people talking to each other about these topics? And if you've got those two steps, session, AMA, it's more likely that people will go from there because they were in the same room and have further conversations, whether with an expert or not, because the snowboarder shows up. It's like, oh, here's somebody else I'd like to ask what they're doing, right?
Well, but also to have a conversation around things where if someone has a question, and I've seen this happen in session, but if someone's like, hey, like Daryl's a great example. It's like, oh my God, how do I choose between, like, I did this thumbnail. I thought it would be really good. It was great. It sucked. And Daryl can say something, but somebody sitting next to them or right down the, you know, the round table could be like, oh, hey, I tried that and this is what I learned. So it's not just that the speakers are doing all the talking and the answering. It's that it's a conversation about it. And so my hope is that for people, again, who, you know, they're walking to a cocktail party, they're sitting back against the wall, or they're not even going to go, that because it's a topic that they're interested in, because it's because they're there and interested, and everybody in that room is interested in the same thing, they might be sitting next to somebody who says something. I'd be like, hey, and I did this once, and then I realized that it was really awkward because the way the room was set up. But this is another thing I want to try more in a round table is, before we started, I did one of those things where I said, okay, I want everybody to, you know, introduce yourself to the person on the right and the left, and just say hi and talk about what you do, just as an icebreaker. And it really worked out, but it was tough when everyone's sitting in theater seating and I'm like, where are you? So that may be a good way to break the ice. And I may try that in one or two to see if it's effective in getting people to come out of their shell a little bit and feeling more warmed up to share.
You know, to me, that is one of the biggest missed opportunities at events. Because here you've got 200, 500 people in the room. They want to learn about, you know, thumbnails. We'll just use that as your example. They're in the room. They already are saying, I'm interested in this, because they walk through the door. They're sitting in those seats. But what do most people do? They pull out their phones because they're uncomfortable. So I think a great MC can get people doing what you just said. It could just be lowering the barrier and realizing, oh, I want to talk to you later about that. And now all of a sudden, you've got someone they want to talk to. I've seen this happen so many times, Jim, where people were sitting next to each other that they didn't know that they were like somebody else. Like I remember two ladies who did social media for art museums, and they happened to be next to each other, We didn't orchestrate it for sure, but they met each other. They talked and realized we're best friends. We're going to stay in touch. And that wouldn't have happened if someone hadn't said, turn to your right and turn to your left and just ask a question, say what you do, what do you want to learn about? So I love that you're on that path, because that wouldn't have happened at the typical networking party. They may or may not have found each other because they weren't in the right room.
To me, a lot of it is about set and setting. And I think when events in general are about that, like, what's your mindset at that point in time? And then what's the setting that's going to allow you to be part of that? And when we walk into a panel, and you know, whether it's big or small, we're sitting in rows, we're kind of in that, you're kind of in the mindset of, oh, I guess I'm kind of back in a lecture hall at school, right? And the setting often, and this is where experience design and room design and everything else can be very much set up, like it's just this antiseptic thing in a hotel or in a convention center. My hope is in the, you know, in my roundtable example, the setting is more conducive to conversation because the room is set up in a roundtable, not just in sort of classroom seating. You know, we can call it classroom seating or in theater style seating. And then that icebreaker when you say, hey, just chat to the person next to you and talk about what you're doing. Like, I gave people 60 seconds that one time I did it, and I had to shut them all up so we could move forward, which I probably should have done. But anyway, when you do that, you put people in the mindset of, I'm not just going to sit and listen, but I'm going to interact with people because I've already done it. So you've changed their mindset, and you have a setting that's conducive to conversation. And I'm hoping that by getting the speakers and the people interested in it, that it's that they can connect with each other, and then some magic can happen of interaction and meeting and connecting, which is hard for a lot of people to do at a cocktail party.
Absolutely. And one suggestion I have is start that before the session is officially supposed to start, like 5 minutes before, get an MC up there and just get people talking to each other. You can do it in so many different ways. You can
We're waiting to start. That's a really, oh my God, that's brilliant. Okay.
Yeah. Try it at one of your next events. I've seen that work powerfully. And the person who's asking or inviting that, it's important how they set it up. They need to say things like the wisdom's in the room. The people next to you are really smart. First of all, they came to this conference. Second of all, they're in this room. But they've probably been doing this a while, because we know the average person at this event has been doing this for at least 5 years. So you're likely sitting next to a veteran. So we want you to have a chance to get to know some cool people. Here's a question you could ask, and you know, just get it going. I think that's can be a really smart thing.
That's a cool setup. Thank you. That's a really cool setup. Anyway, we'll move on. But I just think I'll let you know. We'll come back and check in at some point. I'll let you know how it goes.
Well, it's something to continually improvise on and figure out how does this work best for the audience that you're serving. There may be audiences out there that wouldn't work. You've got people sitting in the rows that don't want to talk to each other. Maybe they're competitors. Maybe they're just, their personality isn't that, but there's benefit for knowing people. You show up in person, in my opinion, because you want to be with people. We can learn almost anything we want to learn online anymore. So you've come to learn with people, to talk with people, to solve problems and build relationships. So I think we should assume that going into an event.
You know, I have one last thought on that, because I could use this. I could have used this at this event I did in Dubai in January. We had to, I was running their industry track. We had to not open up our stage for like 20 minutes or so because it was registration. You know how sometimes things get bogged down. We were a satellite stage and people were still working their way over there. And so that would have been perfect where instead, like I just grabbed a couple of my speakers and said, let's do a little AMA here just while you're waiting. But it would have been better. And I will do this next time that happens, of like, hey, we're not going to start for 15 minutes. People are still getting through. It's all good. You know, opening day, but let's try this. I'd like you to, and then take it through that. So that's also a good thing to do if you have to run late for some reason.
Yeah. And again, this is something a professional MC is going to know how to do. you can trust them to work the room and work that 15 minutes and know how to engage people. Because if everybody's like really separated, then that might be the chance to just do one to many and engage people or invite them to come sit next to each other, which is sometimes awkward and you know the room's going to fill up, but there's conversations that can be had. It takes someone who knows how to read the room and the opportunity.
You know what? I'm going to one last thing. Sorry, but one last thing I'll add to that, because this is an event in the Middle East where cultural norms are somewhat different. So also someone not only is a good MC and knows how to read the room, but also understands the cultural aspects of where they are.
Absolutely. And if you've got a diverse cultural audience, or if it's the Middle East, like you're talking about, or Asian, they can be sensitive to that 100%. I don't want to lose the opportunity to talk about NAB. Is there any other mistake that you made that you want to fix next time?
Oh, there's always, there's perpetual improvement that happens at these events. NAB is the first time now we've done it for 3 years, but I've done, it's all on the show floor. Now it's in a portion of the show floor that's quieter, but it's all set up. There isn't even pipe and drape around it to separate it like a web summit. And so you have this mix of being able to, you know, how do you create something that feels like it's all in one? But also the great thing is, because you're on the show floor, you get people wandering by and they're like, what's going on? I want to sit down. So what we did this year is we had the stage set up so that it was actually felt like something that was separate, distinct and unique. But we were so hidden from the, you know, the main aisles of the show floor that we didn't get a lot of walk up. So need to think about that when somebody says, how do you like this design? Should we go with it? I'm like, yeah, that's good. Does it have that ability to bring in an audience that's just browsing through an event if it's on the show floor?
So these were the workshop or the round table kind of.
No, this is everything. This is our
everything.
It was all right out there on the show floor. This is not like a super loud event. Mm-hmm. It actually works really well, but it just there's a little bit where you need to be able to tease people as they're walking by. And we didn't really have that with one of our stages.
Yeah. I've spoken a couple times at NAMM, and that's at Anaheim Convention Center, 100,000 people, but not necessarily all going to the same place. But I've spoken at that Idea Center, which is out in the hallway, which is super distracting as a speaker because you're watching people go by the entire time. If you're in the audience, it doesn't feel like that because you see the stage and you feel like you're part of an experience. But the good thing about that is it's the exposure that you're talking about. It's like, oh, they're talking about social media. They're talking about this or that. Very interesting. All right. You're involved with several experiments overseas. I'd love to dig into that a little bit because culture is an important aspect of what we need to plan for. What's something that surprised you as you have been planning events in these spaces, Middle East, Asia, wherever you're going?
Well, when you do an event in a place where it doesn't really rain a lot, you can do things outdoors. Mm. And so this event in Dubai, the stage that I ran, it was an outdoor stage. Now, yes, there were some panels to protect from the sun, but I was like, outdoors, really? What's that going to be like? But it turns out in January in Dubai, it's beautiful. It's, you know, US 70, 75 degrees, 20, 22 C. But the stage, you talk about being distracted from people walking by. The stage was set up on a little bit of a slope. And on stage, when you looked out, you saw towers and a big, you know, this whole view of Dubai in the background. And because you were up high enough, it was almost like you just had this beautiful, like it was the most beautiful view I've ever had on a stage ever. And you think about those little, like I'm now ruined when I'm in a convention center and I'm just sitting and I'm like, this is just a stage in a convention center, blah, because I had this amazing experience that where you just sit there and you have this whole panoramic view around you. And it was so beautiful. And there are unique things you can do when you don't have to worry about rain.
I remember in college, some of my favorite times were when spring came and the professor said, hey, class is out on the lawn today. And just a different context puts you in a different mindset. I wish more of us did that. If we can't afford or don't have the time to move to a unique place like a museum or something different than the typical hotel or convention center, How do you make it feel different? Right. I was reminded as you were talking earlier, have you ever done a seating in the round?
I have not, but this event in Dubai did that. So their main stage, I never got to see the main stage because my stage, I was so busy and it was a satellite stage. But the main stage was a theater in the round where they had the people sitting in the center and then all around it. And from everyone I talked to, they said it was great.
It's challenging as a speaker because you have to remember there's people you need to engage on both sides. Typically, you know, you've got two sides of the stage and there's screens going up. It's not necessarily totally in the round, but it could be. But you got to engage people around, and that's not normal for speakers to remember to look every direction and be concerned about what your backside looks like just as much as your front side. But for the people, it feels much more communal. Like we're in this together, whether it's a couple hundred people or 50 people or even larger. I think it has a lot of options that we don't often plan for. Sound has to look different if it's a larger venue, but I think it's something that many of us don't consider when we're planning an event.
Yeah, there were, I think this room held about 800 people and it was on all four sides. The stage was literally in the middle. The screen was back against one wall. It was longer than it was wide. You know, seats were set up so people faced each other. So there were always people that you could look at as an attendee. Again, I'm just bummed that I never actually got to see it in. I mean, I was up there before it started. I was like looking around while it was built. And I'm like, this is really cool. I was thinking, because I do a lot of moderating. I was like, how would I moderate this? What would I do? How would I do Q&A? I don't even know if there was Q&A, but that's a really cool idea. I hope when I do it again in January, they actually have enough time so that I can actually see it in action on the main stage and maybe even do something there so that I get some experience actually doing it firsthand.
I would think you need to have spotters who are helping you look out to different parts of the room, because I think it'd be really hard to monitor all 360 degrees, but we're hypothesizing here.
Exactly. But it's a really cool idea.
All right. I want to go back to something we talked about very much at the start. You were talking about doing three events essentially simultaneously at VidCon. We also referenced that those of us doing hybrid events really are doing two different events, although it doesn't feel like that, but we really need to think about it that way. So talk about one or the other or both and some of the lessons you've learned about being one organizer planning multiple events.
Yeah, and so VidCon, because it's three separate tickets, it really had three different feelings. It's really, for me, my takeaway is you have to have someone run each one. Like you have an executive producer of the whole event, but you really kind of need an EP for each individual one. And like when I did industry, I was kind of the EP. I mean, I set up all the speakers, I set that all up, but I also, when it was going on, made sure that it was all running the day of the event. And so I think that's really important because you want to make sure each one is distinct enough and has an editorial and a content vision unique enough to make it work. And there's a very big difference between a meet and greet with a top YouTuber and talking about, you know, how do you build big businesses in the creator economy? And so being able to be differentiated enough, that to me is the main takeaway. And then make sure that you have very distinct locations. The nice thing about the Anaheim Convention Center, and you've seen this at NAMM, and is you have three levels. I'm not talking about the new North Hall, but you have three levels. So you have like a main level, and then the you know, which like I said, that's where the fans were, and then the middle level for the one for the creator track, and then the industry track on top. And so that really gives you that sense of physical differentiation, and you can build it out with different experience designs as well if you want to.
And, you know, that event, if you had the industry pass, you could go to all three levels.
Right.
Not true if you only had the fan pass. Creators could go to the first and second level. So distinct spaces, distinct schedules. The hybrid event, however, is different because you don't have necessarily a different set of content. You might have a different experience. Have you run hybrid events yet?
Yep. Yeah. We did. Well, during COVID, we went all digital. And then we came back and had that digital and physical. We had actually set up, and I've seen it, at one point we had a separate stage and we had hosts for the digital experience. And so Yeah, the content is the same, but how do you build that? You know, how do you build a unique experience? Like I said, it's set and setting. When you're sitting in a conference room, it's very different than if you're sitting at home watching on a screen. And so how do you solve for that? I don't know that we did the best job, but certainly it was better than it could have been if we had just broadcasted it.
Did you have a separate executive producer just for the digital show?
Pretty much, yeah. We had a team of two people that ran that.
I think that's a big lesson right there. Certainly, I've learned that having the same team trying to do both is challenging. And yep. I've had moderators who are moderating the conversations, but not a separate producer looking at what is this whole experience like. And I think that's a really smart thing that you're doing there.
And we had two hosts too, who would be like, "Yeah, we're like the we're the digital hosts. Like, we're going to talk about what's going on." And you know, we never got to the point, which would have been cool, of being able to do like, "Oh, now we're going to go over here because something cool is happening. Oh, let's go down to this stage and see what's going on." So there was some of that, but I think that kind of, how do you look at it? And you kind of have to do that. Think about it covering, a sporting event or something like that, where you've got the people in the, who are at the game, but then you have people who are actually making the game work for people at home. You've got to have that kind of a mindset.
Yeah, if it's just set up a video camera and let it run, that's not as engaging as if you can provide that insider information, maybe even that's different and special compared to those who are there physically. Certainly, if you're there physically, you can do those AMAs and you can have the hallway conversations and do the networking that it's really hard to do digitally, but you could give a glimpse to things that draws them in, maybe makes them want to come in person, which is oftentimes why we do it. But also says, "Hey, we understand you need to do this from home. We want you to stay engaged and get as much out of it." I don't know if this is true for you. I know most people don't watch the recordings. They think they will. They buy them. They have all the intentions, but they really don't end up doing it. And I don't blame them. Life goes on. You get caught up in the next thing. And all of a sudden you realize a year later, "Oh, I only watched 5 of those recordings." Does that match your experience?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it does. I think it's interesting because I saw what Daryl Eves did with VidSummit, like 16, 17, whatever, where he was recording stuff and making it available and people would pay for that. And he, you know, his event is very education and learning and gets great people coming in. And we did that as well. I actually don't know how it played out and where they're at right now at VidCon, but it was, you know, reasonably successful because we did do a lot of workshops. But still, do people really watch? I don't have access to the numbers, but it's tough. And the thing that I think is interesting, though, is if you do it right, then you can use things like Opus Clip and other software to be able to clip up short form versions of it that you can put out. So it becomes more of a tool for social as well, which is kind of fun.
Absolutely. I think, you know, it's worth doing it and having it. I think creating an experience that makes people want to keep learning, setting the intentions, getting them to show up. That's the deal, is if you have a producer that can make it worth showing up live, then you've got something that's really valuable and people will set the time up apart on their calendar as opposed to, "Oh, I'll watch it later. I've got access to it for however long you've got access to it." I've watched the data. I don't have like full numbers, but I've watched the data of how many come back and watch it later. And it diminishes after the first month, to the point where, you know, there's very little still happening 3 or 4 months later. And it's like, life does happen, but, you know, that's just what people do. So.
Yeah. Also look, you know, people think, "Oh yeah, I'll go back and watch it." But it's when you build something for the screen, it's a very different experience. Like, you're building television, you're competing with YouTube, you're competing with all these other things. And you need to think about it that way. And it's really hard to take one medium and convert it to another. The live medium experience is really hard to convert to a screen consumed experience. And that's just in general. I mean, it's, you know, even like concerts do that. And like the only one I know that really works at any level is people like Phish and the Grateful Dead, who people will sign up and do the couch tour and watch the concerts from home. And people really do that, but there aren't very many examples where you can take that experience and turn it into something that really works. I think sports really is the best example of how you can really make that happen. And that's something that's happening. You know, it's expensive and there's always something going on and different angles and you're telling stories, but just like you said, putting a camera out and putting it out there, it's just not the same.
Sports is an interesting example because in most cases, if you're in person, you're farther away. The advantage is you feel the energy of being there, but for watching the sport, it's way better to watch it on TV because they've got the cameras and the angles and the close-ups and the interviews that you can hear between quarters. If you're watching basketball, that you don't get to hear if you're in the room. Instead, you're watching dogs who are bouncing balls on their nose or some kind of interaction like that, which is fun, but it's not the game. So I what I'm taking away from you is if you're going to do it right, your executive producer for the digital needs to think like a TV producer. Is that kind of
100%, 100%. And how do you engage with that? And like graphics, like your graphics, if you just take the graphics that you're getting off the what's in the room, you know, you really just want to take the house feed without graphics and put your own graphics up and produce it that way and have, you know, lower thirds that you can bring in and have maybe stats and data, get access to the slides early on and be able to snip them up so that you can pre-produce. That's a lot of work, which most people won't do. But if you want to make it engaging, you have to think about it that way.
I'm going to put myself in the spot of anyone listening to this show, and hiring a TV producer and doing all that you're talking about sounds like a lot of budget and really tough if you're doing a first time event, or even if you're doing a larger show, you've got people to communicate this to justify it, and where's the ROI? So let's talk about some experiments you could do that would take you from just setting up a camera. What would be a couple things that this audience could do that would move them closer to that kind of experience without having to go all the way and hiring someone from Hollywood or, you know, from one of the major channels to come do this for them?
I would say start small with just one session or two sessions. And think about, okay, so I have this session. This is my best session. It's my number one session. And work on that to get that out and just say, we're just going to live stream these two things for people who can't be here and try and, you know, and try and live stream it, but add in just a little bit of extra production. Maybe you get, you know, a little bit of switching stuff where you can get a separate feed and switch in and see what happens. The other thing is, go take your top educational experience that people want to know and say, we're going to make this available for free. We're going to take the presentation and we're going to just try to cut it up a little bit and put it out there. I mean, it's just try something. And the other thing is, this is live and on demand, because on demand is the same experience, right? Mm-hmm. Take something and record it on demand and take one or two of them and try and say, I'm not going to put all 20, 30, 100 sessions on YouTube and they're going to get 10 views each. I'm going to take one or two sessions. I'm going to produce them up and I'll cut them up and put them on social, but I'll try and make it a really good experience for YouTube and see where that goes. One or two really good things on your YouTube channel, probably better than 30 or 40 that no one's going to watch.
Would you say that's true even if it's all behind a gate? So that people have paid for this, but you might do that for a couple sessions first time round and make sure that they're really good so people know the sessions to go to, or maybe you're doing it for one room. You know, maybe you've got a multi-track event, but maybe one room you've decided, hey, we're going to go all in, get the producer, get the multiple cameras, do, you know, the host for the room who's a digital host. What do you suggest there?
Yeah, I think doing one room is a good way to start. And if it's a room, you know, do you tweak what the room looks like to make it better for viewers? So, you know, typically a lot of sessions will be like, oh, we're going to do 30 minutes and a 15 minute break, or we'll do an hour and a 15 minute break or whatever. Maybe what you do is 2 or 3 hours of continuous content that you can then stream and then take a, you know, an hour, 2 hour break and then go back and do it. So think about, how do you engage an audience with your best stuff and a really tight, it's very different. And again, it's hard because you don't want to make the experience bad for the people in the room to make it better for the people who are watching. So think about that as well.
You know, it's interesting because you think about the Netflix and the Amazon experiences and all, how they're all starting to put advertisements in, but they know how to get you hooked in with a longer segment before they break it up. if the breakup is, you know, 30 seconds, a lot of times, sometimes it's 5 seconds. They're just trying to break it up a little bit to re-engage you and make sure you're watching. I think we probably could learn a lot from watching what's happening with some of those streaming services out there. Would you agree?
Yeah. And I just had another idea listening to you talk, because, you know, maybe think about, you know, think about baseball tonight on ESPN, or think about some of those wrap-up shows for sports. Maybe rather than streaming it all out, you get your speakers, you know what they're talking about, but you do one tight 30 or 45 minute that's like the highlight best of, where you're like, these are the 4 or 5 speakers that are coming in. Can you also come in to our, you know, hour-long show that we're producing that we're going to stream out there that's going to be the best highlights? And then run it a little bit like a talk show or something like that, where you're not streaming 10 stages and switching it out and running live for 8 hours. You just have a tight 30, 45 minutes that's like, you know, that's, I don't know, show tonight or best of or highlights that you put out there, and you do it live, and then you record it and you try and make it look really good and put it up on live streaming services and on-demand services.
Yeah, you reminded me of ESPN and their top 10. So right. If yep. You had like a quick top 10, took 2 minutes, someone took the time that evening to put that together. So everybody on the digital ticket knows, here are 10 things that stood out today. Not necessarily those are the recommendations, but here are some insights that came from today that we think you would benefit from. Could be a really interesting take on this, which that takes less work than trying to do everything. I think that's the takeaway here, is do something. Experiment, yeah, and measure.
Do one thing well versus doing everything poorly.
Yeah, even back to the conversation you did on NAB, you did a couple things knowing that there's opportunity here to improve the engagement in the room, and now you learn from it and you're going to do something different next time.
Yeah, and look, if you have a really big thing going on, live stream it. Like if you've got you know, one of the top speakers in the world, or if you've got, you know, we have top creators at VidCon, live stream it. Things might happen and you might break the internet. We did this. I remember when Jake Paul, he actually announced that he was marrying Tana Mongeau, and that broke the internet. The little social thing we put out broke the internet. Imagine if we put that whole thing and just said, we're just going to stream this one session because we know it's going to be these top people. We didn't know they were going to do that, but that would have been crazy. So pick your best thing and figure out how to make it look good for an audience, you know, the home audience, not the studio audience.
I remember when I was there 1 year, Jake Paul walked in through the door and a storm of people came surrounding him. You couldn't hear because the girls were streaming. You couldn't get anywhere because he was surrounded by so many people. So really, really fascinating how some people get that. Well, Jim, this has been a great conversation. We've covered a lot of ground. I would love to end with our signature sign off here, and then we'll give you a chance to say where people can follow you. So what are 3 words or themes that have stood out in this conversation for you?
So 3 words. First of all, don't be afraid. Oh, wait, 3 words. Okay, 3 words. Experiment. Engage. And be humble.
All right. My daughter is at the door. I'm going to go pause this for just a second. She can't get in. She doesn't have her keys. So I will be back and I'll play my sign off in just a second here.
Cool.
Actually, do this. Go ahead and tell people where to find you, and then I'll come back and I'll add the sacks later.
So want to know where to find me? Go to LinkedIn. I write a newsletter about the creator economy called Inside the Creator Economy. You can subscribe on LinkedIn or Beehive. And LinkedIn, I'm just Jim Louderback, J-L-O-U-D-E-R-B. Come engage and hang out, and let's build a great event world together.
All right. Sounds like she came in. Say your words again.
Oh, nice.
Experiment, engage, and?
Be humble. Humble.
Humble.
Well, Jim's audio didn't work at the end, so we're going to bring this show to a close just with me. Make sure you follow Jim Lauterbach on LinkedIn. He writes there regularly. He is creating events all over the globe. I want to thank you for listening to this show. If you would, give me a rating and review on whatever podcast platform you listen to. And with that, let's go change the world one event at a time, stamping out those boring events.
Thanks for listening to the Event Innovator Show. Connect with Phil on philmachon.com and be sure to subscribe and never miss an episode.